speaker, any member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living in a program or recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distance to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our act of addiction or war stories, because we all know what it's like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we're here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. I'm an addict called Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy.
And I just really would like to acknowledge God, you know, and thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I look back over my life. All the times I try to kill me, got mad. A few times in New York when the dealer said it's the last bundle and I'm gonna give it to him, and I'm like, come on, man. Well, since you won't sell it to me, maybe he'll give me a couple till they re-up with the red tape. I ain't giving you none of this, Jersey. And I'm angry. I can't get what I want, man. They put me to oblivion. Oblivion as close to death as possible. And I go down to the gallery and I see the ambulance, emergency. And I'm like, what happened? They said the guy that caught that last bundle, it was poison. So I had a lot of experience with that. But it didn't start out with me like that. See, I wore a mask a long time. I know most of us in here had those drug dealing days. Mine's was real short. And it was all downhill, and I began to mask and put on masks. I was a hypocrite. I was a bad actor. Talking about the same guy on Beggar's Lot who said, I would never be like him. Oh, man, I would never be like her, and wonder, always intrigued with what happened. This guy used to own the town, and now he's over there on Beggar's Lot by the barrel. And I used to talk to him, and I'm like, I'll never be like him. Couldn't see the progression. When I went to jail as a young teenager in 1961, and the old timer told me, Jimmy, you don't want to live like this. Your mother's a hard worker. She was a migrant worker. I said, Pop, you don't know what you're talking about. I ain't never coming back. Began to slip and slide, man. Could nobody tell me anything because I got a mask called pseudo-intellectual. Let me tell you what it is. A pseudo-intellectual is someone who don't know, but they don't know they don't know. Always arguing about something I don't know about. This was before I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm sitting on Beggar's Lot with 23 arrests, undid times in four different states, man. Rikers Island, the Tomb, Brooklyn Navy Yard, Yardville, Leesburg, Seminole County, Florida, Cumberland County, North Carolina, Bergen County, New Jersey, Middlesex County, talking about dragging 7 felonies and always denying that I had a problem, man. But this day, July the 19th, 1990, and I'm not talking about the original prayer, God, get me out of this one. I said, God, if I got to live like this, I'd rather die, man. Because why? I'm hearing voices. My granddaddy, Joe Gills, was buried June the 10th, 1960. He's coming to me saying, Jimmy, you don't have to live like that. But I've never heard of y'all. I ain't got to y'all yet. But I'm feeling desperation, man. I'm feeling shame when I walk up the street and me and Terry and David G and all of them boys, and I'm dapping up the street 153 pounds. And used to own the town, and I hear somebody say, yo, man, here come that begging-ass Jimmy. The reality, man, when my son Kareem going to school in the 8th grade, and I'm walking him, touting him, saying, how much Louise gave you, man? She gave you $2. Give me $1, dog. But then when y'all roll by, I try to puff it up like I got my weight up and trying to act like the stains ain't under the arm. I'm talking about going to the store for the young bloods, but I'm acting like I'm ordering it for me. So I came to Narcotics Anonymous that day. And y'all say an addict, any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Even a 44-year-old addict called Jimmy, who they say his psychological profile say he could never change. Oh, I go back to the Doogie days. I go back to the days when everything is good, and all of a sudden you catch a cold, and you think you got the flu. I go back to the days when I say, damn, I got the flu. And the old timer say, you got a chippy. Here, take this. And I take it, and all of a sudden, the flu is gone. So I learned real early how to slip and slide and be dishonest, man. And so I got here, and I'm realizing that I don't need to be here because I ain't no intravenous. I ain't no addict. I'm a drug dealer. Until y'all say, Jimmy, you was a title, man. And then an old timer came by me and say, yo, Jimmy, you might as well stay, dog. I said, why? I mean, I just had a little drug problem. He say, because if you leave here, the best you could hope for is going to be worse than it ever was. He said, we're talking about addiction, man. He said, anytime you coming out of a dark place and you go to the light, if you go back, it's going to be darker than it ever was. I said, you know, I think I'll stay. Even though I was saying I'm an addict called Jimmy, I ain't believing in that stuff. I'm still wearing a mask. Get here. Let me just read a little something before we go on. Fifth step, addicts tend to live secret life. For many years, we covered low self-esteem behind phony images that we hope would fool people. Unfortunately, we fool ourselves more than anyone. Although we often appear attracted and confident on the outside, we really were hiding a shaky, insecure person on the inside. The mask! They gotta go. But I've been living with the mask all my life, man, and y'all say the steps is the key. Well, I got a sponsor, and I got a home group. I done been to Japan, Hawaii, Philippines. I done been to Wake Island. I done been to California. I done been over My sponsor ain't never left Philadelphia. How in the hell he gonna tell me so? I came here, I have been married 20 years, this got in and out of divorces and ain't got no... How you can't tell me nothing? But something opened me up to suggestions, man. And that was, I don't want to go back. See, I got a lot of experience saying, I can't get to where I want to get, oblivion. I can't get there. I'm looking at people and they using with me before I got here. They get one bag and nod out. I got a whole bottle and my eyes still open. I can't, it ain't working for me. It ain't working for me. So I come here, man. I come here, 1989. I'm begging. I'm begging for one of the young boys. Used to go to Florida, bring 50 pounds of reefer back. Kilo of coke on my stuff on the train. He's been strong now. I need a favor. Look, man, let me get two on credit. I ain't got like that, dawg. And this how he came at me. He said, you know what, Jimmy? I said, what? He said, he talking to me like this. He said, you see that bag over there? He said, you get that bag, give them to that B over there, take two off the top. Everything in me say, don't do that. Don't do it. I got a disease that is locked in the short-term pleasure in spite of the long consequences. I ain't got no choice in the matter. If I don't do it, somebody else gonna get the bags and I'ma still be ill, man. Hell, I gotta go. Yeah. I'm talking now. I've got my other mask on, you know. Got my chair. Hey, ain't nothing wrong with me. Shit. When I get ready, I'm gonna start doing responsible stuff. Hell, man, let me get a beer. Yo, give him beer. Man, they just knocked a broad off in the project with 20 bums of dope. I'm like, damn. I felt it. Didn't say nothing. 2 days later, man, August of 89, all over New Brunswick, Jimmy done got knocked off, $50,000 bail, and he's going to be prosecuted on a career criminal status. I can't handle it. God damn, I'm 45. I can't handle no time now. Them young bloods don't never go to bed and shit. They, you know, they're counting. I can't do no time no more. Shit. So they came down to 10 years, and they came down to 3 years. When he told me, he said, Jimmy, I got a good deal for you. I said, yes, sir, lawyer. He said, this is offer you 3-1 still. I damn near tongue kissed him. I'm like, he said, damn, don't get carried away. I can handle that. I missed my first meeting. I missed my first meeting December the 17th, 1990. Great, hell of a day for me. Kevin, Owen, man, all of y'all, man. Boy, Freddie, Jeff, all of y'all, man. When I was in this program deep for 5 months, never missed a meeting. And I was in front of the judge, and I got sentenced 3-1 stiff. I'm one of the ones that went to jail to state prison clean. Walked the highway picking up paper. I was sharing last night. I learned out of that, don't throw paper out the car, because somebody got it. It might be you picking it up. You know, I don't do that. They said, if nobody play by the rules, you need to learn how to play by the rules. Hey, dog, man, what jail you coming out? How much you weigh, Jimmy? I said, 210, man. Oh, what jail you coming out? We ain't never seen you that big on the street. I'm like, I'm coming out of Narcotics Anonymous, man. Studying the basic text. Everybody in here know me. I'm standing up straight. For 10 years, I was just like that. That's how I used to walk. Say, God, I want my walk back. Well, I go down to prison, and I know I'm going to get me an easy job in the laundromat because I got a bad hip. The doctor said, I got a good job for you. I'm like, well, yeah, good. He said, walking 8 miles a day. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? But anyway, I walked, man, for 6 months. June the 5th, 1991, I was back with a bracelet around my ankle. I had to be home real humble and folded my sons. 9 o'clock. People go to meetings, they say, we got to get Jimmy home before that bracelet go off. Wore for 6 months, y'all remember? And God did something for me to unscript the mask. And I'm going to show you how important this is. And I just want to tie it in. I got hurt on a job. They thought I was dead up there, New Brunswick. I was trying to do right, and I fell. I couldn't do no work, man. I couldn't do construction. I was front. I fell, man, broke my pelvis. And I filled out some paperwork in 1988, and they didn't have any money. Here I am just getting off the bracelet, 47 years old, and they asked me that I want to go to college. I haven't read, I graduated from high school in 62. I sold my first pint of blood in New York City in 1964 before I went to the military. Went to Vietnam, came home, Fort Benning, went to Florida A&M, then last a semester. And now I'm going to college, man. Couldn't read when I got here. Read Who's an Addict. Went to college, man. First semester, January of 1992, I get a 3.2 average. I say, I can do this. Evidence. 2 years go by, I'm 49 years old. Get an associate's degree with Yarmouth Wallace Dreams. Put in for one university, Rutgers University. Majored in psychology. Dean's List. National Honor Society. We in the psychology class talking about criminal justice issues. They say that if you've been to jail more than twice, your psychological problem, you could never change. I say, if these motherfuckers knew who was in this class, we wouldn't. Okay. Get my bachelor's in 96. I'm 51 years old. Go down to North Carolina to share at a convention in Charlotte in 96. They flew me down. They invited me in 97. We rented a van. 10-12 of us went down to North Carolina from Burlington. Fellowship down there. I shared that Saturday. We fellowshiped Jamil, all of us, man. Tell my story. Coming back, looking for a job in Baltimore, and one of the guys say, man, I work with the fire department. I'm a police. I'm sponsoring these jokers. I said, I can't get a goddamn job. I said, I wish I had never been to jail. Somebody in the van said, Jimmy, if you take one of those days of jail out of your past, you won't be the man you are. You don't have to wear a mask around here. Do you believe that God will take misery and failure and turn it into your greatest asset, man? I'm like, you right, bro. You right. 2 days later, Fred, man. Fred had 20 years. Fred put me on a methadone program. Fred was coming up on 20 years, 2 weeks, and Fred relapsed. Fred asked me to be his sponsor. But Fred told me to go to the VA, the federal government. I went over there, and they saying, won't you volunteer? I ain't fronting, man. I volunteer. I do H&I. They showing me office etiquette and stuff. April the 27th, 1997, doctor called me in the office, say, you come here, man, have a seat. I said, yeah, doc. He said, you thought about what you're going to do with your life? I say, I can't get a job nowhere. I'm a 7-time ex-felon. He said, how are you like a career with the federal government? I'm like, come on, doc, stop playing. He said, you'll fit in good with all the rest of us crooks. They slow me in, man. He retired. I went on, got my master's in 98, and I've been with the feds for 10 years. But there's a responsibility. I believe sharing around the country, never, never, never sent out a tape. Got commitments, conventions all over, but that could be a mess. Education could be a mess. New cars could be a mess. Hill figures, Timberlands, FUBUs could be a mess, man. I'm talking about better than, so I need a mechanism. I definitely need the steps in my life. So the other day, my wife said, stop and get some fish. No, why you want to stop and get some fish? I'm coming home from work. She said, just stop and get the fish, Jimmy. I'm going to cook them. And I'm in the fish and ordered the fish, and I go to the store next door, and there's a, I see the bum outside. Man, a bum, you can't hide from another bum. That's why we have to get honest in here. I cannot lie to a lie. So I walked in the store, and I'm standing in the line, five or six people in the line. And the guy in the store said, that motherfucker out there, he's standing, he's a no good, he smell. All of a sudden, he wasn't talking to the guy outside, he was talking to me. So I go outside, I got $2 in my hand, and the guy come to me. I saw the move. I'm hypervigilant. The hypervigilant, you see everything. And when he walked over to me, he said, yo, man, I need a dollar. He said, I swear I'm going to go get some food, man. You can go in there with me. I said, here's the dollar, man. And I walked away. I said, wait a minute. I said, come here. I said, here's another dollar. I said, the reason why I'm giving you this dollar, because I'm just like you. It was God manifesting himself to let me know that ain't nobody too low for narcotics or nothing. But all of the greens and all the money and all the prestige, there's nobody too high for this program. So with all the master's degree, I'm still powerless. My disease worked through my thinking and my feelings. Spike Lee and Steven Spielberg is wonderful directors. My feelings don't make good directors, man. They don't direct very well. I need to let my feelings and my thinking serve me, not run my life. Yeah, because I felt this way don't mean I got to act on it. So I picked up another mask. Man, I ain't never went outside my relationship since I've been in the room. Almost 20 years, I ain't had no unauthorized pussy. We need to, look, I'm talking about the mask, man. I need to talk about that because I got women come to me and say, Jimmy, I hear your story. You so spiritual. Will you sponsor me? And I'm like, let me tell you my story. Ain't got nothing to do with you, man. But I sound sometimes not righteous, but self-righteous. Like I'm above that. How can you come to me and I got almost 20 years in that area and you just fell 2 days ago? And you were scared to approach me, so I got to open it up. Don't nobody put me on a pedestal. I put me on there by not getting honest, not taking the mask off and say, let me tell you who I am. Let me tell you that my job, because I was self-righteous and judging people, my job sent me down to Atlanta. I'm in Atlanta airport. I got my bags, man, and I'm like real spiritual. It's almost like I got earphones on. I ain't got no earphones on, but Frank of Beverly say, Southern girls, and I'm like, oh my God, God damn, what do they feed them down here? Yeah, I've been wearing a mask up there in Jersey, man. People know I'm real spiritual, but I'm in Atlanta by myself. They won't know. So I go to the meeting in Atlanta, celebrate it, I believe 15 years. Raise my hand. I'm from Jersey. I'm visiting. I got 15 years. Even when I was saying that, I was looking at that. I ain't hear nothing. But the steps, talking about telling me the truth about me to me. I'm talking about stop being a phony. Be who you are. I said, look, I'm not only celebrating 15 years, man. I want to use. My first step tells me, because I hear people in the room saying, oh, I want to use, but I don't want to use the dope. God damn, that don't sound like powerless of me. If I got a void, just like my vacuum cleaner got a void, when I and my wife have me doing the rugs, and when I dump that bag, it don't just have dirt, it has thumbtacks, it pick up anything that fit in it. My void is the same way. So I shared that. I did a seminar about 80 psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors. I did the seminar. I'm doing the seminar, man. I got my best stuff on and stuff, and I'm still delirious. I'm still got that educated mask on, and but I scripted, and man, guess what happened in Atlanta? Soon as I got through doing the seminar, the doctor, who's nationally renowned, say, Mr. Gordon, the cheese and the wine will be served in about 5 minutes. My disease say, I told you you was misdiagnosed. Why in the hell can you still be an addict with all of God done did for you? You walk for miles, you wanted your hip back. When you had your surgery on January the 6th, 2000, and an orthopedic surgeon looked at you and he say, in 6 months, it'll be like you never had an operation because your gluteus maximum muscle is so built up from walking. Did you used to walk? I wasn't confused. I prayed, and God always, that's why I'm skeptical about being specific in my prayers. Because he'd say, I'll give you a walk back, but you got to do this, dog. You can't see stumbling blocks in your life when you're dealing with God, man. You got to see stepping stones. So I look, here go Bob. Bob coming up on probably 25 years now. Bob and another addict, they come through the crowd. I see the crowd and I see Bob them in Atlanta. I met them Friday night. This is Saturday. They cut through and now they wrestle with my disease for 5 seconds. And Bob them say, yo man, Jersey, we come to take you to a meeting. I said, how do y'all know where I was at? He said, we went on the internet, you know. I said, well, why y'all came? He said, because you want to use, man. And we don't want you to use. And I got in the car, and I'm sitting in the back of the car, tears coming out my eyes, and I had to ask a question. I said, Bob. He said, what? I said, suppose I'd have said I wanted to use a woman. Would y'all have came? He said, hell no. For what? If I'd have went there and said that, I just want to use a woman and I don't want to use the dope, maybe my clean date would have changed. Mm-hmm. Better be specific, bruh. You better stop waiting till the clean time start counting down and be one of the ones when it get down to 2 weeks and 30 days and 2 days and you holler, get honest. You better stop doing that. Because you probably was more honest then than y'all now. Because you got some stuff and you got an ego. No, sometimes you don't dress because of you. You dress what the people going to think when you go to the meeting. Sometimes you ain't supposed to go to a meeting, but you scared somebody might say, Jimmy ain't recovering right. So you, when you tell somebody, say you're going to a meeting tonight, you don't say no and put a period behind it because no is a complete sentence with a period. But it goes on when you put a comma behind it and you got to holler, no, man, because my wife, I got to do something. Why in the hell are you still building up excuses? We say this is a do the best you can program. Why are you afraid, man? Because you've got self-centered fear and you're always in the future. Or you're going back to the past. You got all this noise going up and this mental noise going up. It ain't that you're not using your mind, it's using you. Go to a damn stoplight and don't even know why you stop. Just something else running the show. Because I got a mask on and can't nobody tell me nothing. So I'm telling you today that I'm an addict. And I haven't arrived job anywhere. I'm not an intellectual. When I try to be intellectual, I lose and I get look like a damn fool. I'm a country boy from dirt roads right outside Orlando, man. I took an attic, man. Took an attic to my hometown, man. Went to Atlanta and did meetings. Went to my hometown. He said, man, this is 10 miles from Disney World. They still got dirt roads. You can have a handkerchief to wipe the mud off the shoes before you go to the bar and do the James Brown. I come up here wanting to be a city slicker. I better be able to hug people and stop that nonsense. Give me a hug. Start saying, let me give you a hug. Getting away from the mass and the self-centeredness, man. I'm still a guy named Jimmy, and I'm not a speaker. I think a speaker talk about theory. I'm a messenger. I talk about experience. When a guy walk into my office, and some of the guys in here, and they see me with the governor, or I take people in on these different commissioners with 7 felonies, and when they there, I say, come on up here, let me introduce you, because I dare me put on a damn mask like I don't know where I came from. When I came here, nobody else wanted to deal with me. You all say, you're a positive possibility because I'm narcotics or not. And God have used you to go to education, Rick, to show people that are scared that walk into your blessing. Oh, there's some people in here still scared. And even people in the, I think the group gets scared. Oh, the group can't see into tomorrow. Jimmy, why are you going to college? You are, Jimmy going to college. Didn't believe. See, my blessing was my blessing. But I knew when I was up at Rutgers competing, and I know making the dean list, and I know I done prayed, and I'm like, God, when in the hell is these questions going to get hard? You understand? So we all, in closing, got to strip the mask where people can come to us and say, tell me, how did you leave the Bronx and being where you're at? Tell me, how did you get off the corner and you ain't never been nothing and look at you now and ain't the outside, but you got a certain goal about you. That you can do things can't nobody else do because you can hear what people are not saying, not what people are saying. You got an ability because of a spiritual awakening, but God don't like phoniness. A damn hypocrite is a bad actor. Be yourself, man. And I say, I'm a close, man, but my wife went to a meeting with me. And I gave my phone number. I say 609-835-4176. She said, why you give your number out? I don't want to be in jail no more. I don't want you not to tell what I do. My integrity can stand scrutiny. So when women call my house and my wife say, Jimmy, why you know your history. Why is she calling here? I say, not guilty, Your Honor. Or when she say, Jimmy, why you did that? I say, I'm guilty. Well, I got a 10-step, man. I can step up to the plate. So in closing, man, God, help me be righteous but not self-righteous. Help me be selfless and not selfish. Help me have compassion and not be critical. Help me have humility and not arrogance. Let me be who I am. I'm just an addict. Done hit the 60 mark. Y'all, I don't look it. Take care of myself. Dentist every 6 months. Digital damn PSAs, all of that. Scared to death when I took the AIDS test and still scared when I take them. Don't live like that. But I don't know how my wife living. So I need to say I'm at risk all the time. But I need to love people, man. So I'm just a guy, man, that love people. I don't front my material successes. I try not to go there, but when you put me in a damn tight corner, I'll back you up with some stuff. I still get trying to get intellectual, man. So I still could pick up the mask. But today, you know, and sitting up here with my sister, man, Shantae, and to see all of you all out there, my brothers, I love you all. My strength come from you all. And thanks for having me.
Can you help me thank Jimmy for sharing once again? Okay, our next speaker is Shantae. She's originally from the Philadelphia area, and she's also going to share on who's behind the mask. So help me welcome Shantae.
I'm an addict. My name is Shantae. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite members from outside the fellowship, the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it is like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. My name is Shantae, and I am an addict. Look, I want to thank God, number one, for allowing me to be here. You know, for waking me up this morning and bringing me here. You know, and I have to give him his due because he is my everything. I want to thank you for sharing. I want to thank this committee for actually choosing me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope with you all. Jimmy, you did a fabulous job as always. And as I look out in the room, I want to thank those who found it not robbery to come here and support me, because I'm the addict who had no support. My getting clean wasn't at the urgence of my family. It wasn't at the urging of my pastor. Nobody urged me to do this. And I had nobody to support me. But when I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I found a support like no other support I've ever known in life. Mm-hmm. You know, some of us had that story where our families were insistent that we get help. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the first one to be plucked from addiction, active addiction, in my family. So I was the first person to look at my situation, and instead of looking at the picture on the wall is crooked. But instead of me turning my head and looking at the picture, I straightened the picture up and looked at it rightly and knew that there was something wrong. Didn't really know what it was yet, but I knew that there was something wrong. I developed an image of who I wanted the world to see. I needed to develop that image so that I could go about doing what I was doing in active addiction. See, I didn't want some of the places that I went, some of the people that I was around, I was scared to death. So I had to portray this person that was cool. I always had something flip. I always had something funny and humorous, because I figured somebody can't be mad at you if they laughing at you. So I tried to keep people laughing. But that was a defense mechanism. See, I need to talk about the fear that had me in its grips that helped develop that alter image, that alter ego that I dealt with and I presented to people in my active addiction. because I didn't feel comfortable in the crowd, but I wasn't comfortable outside of the crowd. So I did whatever I had to do. They talk about a chameleon. I was a chameleon, y'all. And if I ain't careful, I'll be a chameleon right here. See, I'll do whatever I think you want me to do. Because that way, I ain't really got to be true to nothing. Through Narcotics Anonymous, the 12 steps and 12 traditions, and some people who really love me, they helped me get in touch with who and what I really am. See, for real, I was scared of being rejected. And if I ain't feeling good about me right now, that same thing can come back and set itself up. And I can feel that personality when it moves in. Where I get aloof. I become very quiet. But for real, it's because I ain't really feeling comfortable in my surroundings. So I go back and I get that behavior, put it on, it's just like a coat, put it on so I can deal. But through working the 12 steps, I got to that fourth step where it helped me shed some of that stuff that made me feel inadequate and less than, and that everybody was better than me. That thing that used to stop me from looking y'all in your eyes, that would cause me to come up and shake somebody's hand but never give them eye contact, could talk to you and be all on the floor, talking, in the air, twiddling my hands and fingers, bouncing from side to side but not looking at you. That thing. I learned it was called low self-esteem. But I had created an image and a persona of elevated self-esteem so that you could see what I wanted you to see. See, I thank God for when I came into Narcotics Anonymous and the type of treatment that I received when I got here. See, I came in off the street. I packed a dress. I didn't pack no drawers, just a dress, two pairs of shoes, and I went to detox. I don't know what I thought, but that's what I took. And in those 7 days in detox, and I need to say my higher power was working even then because it was really only 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then they send you home. But my higher power gave me 7. And in those 7 days, there was a doctor that was waiting on me and taking care of me. And he said, I can put some weight on you. And you can look a little bit better. But the real work, you're going to have to do. And I sat in that room by myself, and I thought about what he said. And I realized that this was an opportunity for me to make a change in my life. See, at first it was just that I didn't want to go back to where I came from, because I had kind of figured out that if I go back there, I'll probably go back and do what I always did. But I wasn't quite ready yet to, like, open up and tell somebody I needed help, for real. I was just going to get there, get the weight that he talked about, and then I'm going on about my business. The 5th day of that stay, I went to the staff and told them that I don't want to go back. That if I go back, I'm going to use. I knew that. But I didn't know where I was going to go, because technically that meant if I didn't go back, I was going to be homeless. I chose not to go back. The 7th day, they told me there was a bed open in a 30-day program. And I went to that 30-day program. I walked down, got in the elevator, went down in the hospital. I came through Jeffrey in North Philadelphia on Broad and Girard. And I walked underground to a 30-day facility. And I stayed in that 30-day facility, and they got me in touch with the fact that I'm an addict and that addicts use drugs. And if I don't talk about how I'm feeling, I'm going to go out and I'm going to use. And I sat there and in my head I said, well, they don't know who they're talking to because I'm not going to use, you know, and I don't have to listen to what they're telling me because that's for them and it's not for me. But they had this way where they would put a circle of chairs around and they would put one person in the middle of that circle. And they would take turns. Look, if I didn't know what a character defect was, I knew what it was by the time I got out of that 30 day. Because they told me all about my character defects. And I had shut down because, see, I had this personality, this alter ego that when people were saying things that I didn't like, I'm not going to answer back. I ain't going to their level. I'm just going to shut up and not say nothing. So I do that time after time. They take me to this group time after time. They take my inventory and they tell me what I ain't and what I am, and I wouldn't say a word. Then came the time that the staff pulled me off to the side and they said, now listen, either you're going to do something, open up and let us know who you are, or you got to leave here because there's somebody else out there who'll be willing to come in here and do what they need to do in order to get better. You make the decision. Went back to my room again, y'all. And I thought about how good I felt that moment. And I knew I wanted to feel better because I had heard people come from the outside in and say that it gets better. So I went back to them and I told them, it's not that I don't want to be here, it's that I don't really know how to respond. They said no response is a response. We want to know how you're feeling. How do you feel when they tell you those things? Do you get angry? See, when I say I was shut down and behind a mask, I didn't give any emotion. I just showed up. And man, when I started to talk about I feel, they said, add on to it. Start your statement with I feel. I feel angry and I feel hurt. I feel lonely. I feel rejected. I feel isolated. I feel depressed. I feel that nobody cares about me. Nobody wants me. When I see everybody else's family members come to see them and nobody shows up to see me, I feel devastated. And it hurts me that my own flesh and blood don't want me. And they said, well, that's a good start. And they let me go. And I got a chance to get out of that center seat, and I got a chance to sit on the outside. But I was reluctant to talk about anybody, to tell somebody else about their character defects, because I knew mine was so many. That same treatment facility used to take us to this meeting called the zoo. Oh my God. And part of that person that I had erected and shaped up and masked was that if I was going to go out there, I had to be perfect. You know, my hair had to be perfect. My nails had to be perfect. My lipstick had to be perfect. My shoes had to be perfect. Before I was willing to go outside to a meeting. And half of the time, because remember y'all, only took a dress and two pairs of shoes with me. I was wearing the same thing over and over and over again. I didn't want to go out to these meetings. So they gave me a pair of jeans to put on and a shirt to put on and some rope to hold the jeans up that was three sizes too big. And the flannel shirt was a man's shirt and it was too big. And they told me, now you ready to go to the meeting. And they took me to that meeting that was huge with all of these folks wearing them clothes. I couldn't lift my head up, y'all, because my identity was in what I put on. My self-worth was what I saw in the mirror after I dressed it up. But it wasn't the inside work. It wasn't the inside work. So I went to that meeting and I walked in with my head down and I kept my head down through the speaker. People hugged me. I hugged them with my head down. And then I was getting ready to leave, and some people said, you know what? You don't really need to wear that makeup, girl. Mm-hmm. You look all right. Mm-hmm. Why you put on all that makeup? And I thought about it in my room. In that time in that 30-day treatment facility, I got in touch with prayer. And I need to say, I had done so much stuff out there that my brain was fried. I couldn't remember. Half the time, I had to count back to figure out how old I was. And because I had lied when it was popular, either I was 2 years older, 3 years younger, I didn't know how old I was, you know. So I had to, like, literally sit back and count that. Oh, okay. So that makes me born in what year? Oh, 61. So I had to go into prayer with the prayer in front of me written. Because the moment I tried to quiet myself and pray, all kinds of stuff, it's that static that would be going on in my head and was running and racing a million miles a minute. So I had to read it. And literally it was, God, grant me the serenity. And then a thought would pop in. And I'd linger with that thought, and I had to come back, God, grant me the serenity. And it hit me again, God, grant me the serenity. Eventually, God, just let me get through this prayer. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I was able to get through it. Mm-hmm. Then it came time again for them to put me out, send me back somewhere. Mm-hmm. I was like, technically, I don't have nowhere to go. I made myself homeless when I came to NA. If I go back home, I'm going to use. My mother didn't want me to come there. My sister had moved to Savannah. My grandmother was senile by that time. My father was living in Georgia. I didn't have nowhere else to go. And if I went back, I would use. So they said, if you want this, you really sound like you're serious. So give us some time and let's see what we can do. I kept right on with that same prayer, God grant me the serenity, because I didn't know no other one. Mm-hmm. And they came to me, they put me in the room, and they said, look, there's an opening. It's in the Salvation Army. You'd have thought they told me it was a Waldorf Astoria. I said, the Salvation Army? They said, yeah. It's a work release program. I said, yeah. They said, is a room for me? They said, yes. And I went to the Salvation Army, y'all, which is a shelter. Mm-hmm. And I became a member of that work release program. Mm-hmm. They taught me how to get up in the morning, because I was used to getting up in the night. Mm-hmm. They taught me about sleeping like normal people mm-hmm. when it got dark, mm-hmm. instead of roaming the streets. Mm-hmm. They taught me how to show up and work. Mm-hmm. But see, I still had this image. I'd be in the Salvation Army by night, somebody else by day. Mm-hmm. Nobody really knew my address. Go to the meetings. They give us passes. We go to the meetings. So I live in Roxborough. You heard of Manioc, haven't you? Really, I was living on Peachin Street, 4313 Peachin Street, in the Salvation Army. I was one of 12 other women. I stayed there for 6 months. And they said, well, it's time for you to go. I said, but I don't have nowhere to go. They said, well, give us a little time. Let's see what we can do. And I went right back to that prayer. By that time, y'all, I had graduated, and I had gotten the Lord's Prayer. Somebody typed it up for me, so I was reading that one. And I was able to read that one all the way through. Without my mind drifting off down the street and across the courtyard, town and everything else. And I read that one consistently. They came back to me and they said, well, we have a room and a bed available for you in an intensive care program called Interim House. You're going to be with 23 other women. And I said, oh, my God. You got a bed for me. I had become grateful, y'all. I had gratitude. I was willing to do whatever I had to do. I went to that intensive care program. And boy, oh boy, in one house with 23 women, it seemed like everybody had a cycle every day. Everybody was bouncing off the walls. Everybody had PMS and moody every single day. And I stayed. And they put me into psychotherapy. And they did one-on-one therapy. And I did group counseling. And I worked. I snotted and I cried. I wanted to run. I didn't want to get in touch with the feelings. I didn't want to go back and deal with those things in my past that made me feel that way. I didn't want to deal with the physical abuse, the mental abuse, the sexual abuse. I didn't want to deal with the rape. I didn't want to deal with the things that had happened to me in my past. But they got through. And I was able to start to bring down that mask and dissolve that chick that I had created. And I was able to tell people that, you know what? Most times when I come into a room, you might be there, but I'm scared to look around. And people stopped thinking that I didn't want to speak to them. Because I had to let them know that that was part of my thing, my low self-esteem, that I couldn't walk into the room and really look around because I was afraid. It wasn't that I didn't think that I needed to be on the front row. It was that I still had some of that paranoia from the drugs that I had to sit at the back of the room with my back against the wall and able to see all doors. It was my disease. But until I opened up and told people about what I was feeling and what was going on with me, they would choose to see me however they wanted to see me. But I had to get honest and let them know. You know, I stayed in that treatment facility, man. I learned how to, at the work relief program, you know, the Sally, as we so affectionately call it, the Sally. I had learned how to get up. I had become employable. You know, I had learned how to go to bed at a decent hour, how to get up, how to get my breakfast, how to get my clothes washed and cleaned and, you know, and do all that kind of stuff. So when I got there, they were helping me deal with my emotional stuff. So when it came time for me to start looking for a job, because that program trying to transition you out. So I had to look for a job prior to leaving there. They taught me how to interview. They taught me what to say, what not to say. They taught me what to wear, what not to wear. I found out about being on time so I would arrive at my interview an hour early because I wasn't from Philadelphia and I used to get on the L going the wrong direction. So I had to allow for time that I could get on the L going the wrong direction, realize I was going the wrong direction, get off, cross over, and get on it going the right way. So I had to give myself that kind of time. And I would get there early. I carried that same thing into the job when I got one. Dealing with me was a full-time job. Got out of that program, got a job, got a room. Damn, I'm handling now. I got a room. I'm making a paycheck every week. I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. I was feeling pretty good. Although once I paid for the room, bought a trans pass, I couldn't eat. I had a sponsor, y'all, who was good to me. Who was really, really good to me. And she took me in her closet and she gave me clothes to wear that were appropriate for an interview. She coached me with what not to say, what to say. She was a retired principal. She took me and introduced me to places and people and things that I had never dealt with before. Banquets and formals and, you know, stuff that I never did before. But she taught me how to handle myself in those situations so that I didn't come up looking like a fool. And she also fed me on her many a nights. And the nights that she wasn't there, y'all were there to feed me. When I needed to know how to get to someplace, because I wasn't from Philly originally, I call y'all up and y'all tell me how to get there. Blow by blow, some of y'all would even go with me. And I appreciated that. But I had to first tell you, that means to get rid of this fasana and say, look, I don't know where I'm going at. I'm scared to death. I want the job. I need the job, but I don't know if I'm going to get the job. And y'all would say, why shouldn't you? Why won't you get the job? You know how to get up and go to work on time. You show up early to the meeting. You stay late after the meeting. You pick up trash and do all those things. You're employable. You're dependable. You'll get the job. Just don't use make a meeting. And I got another job. But I was able to change that room into two rooms. I no longer had a roommate down the hall. I had my own bathroom. And then God did something awesome. He put my daughter back in my life after I was clean. And my daughter will be 22 in June. And September 22nd of this year, by God's grace, we'll celebrate 20 years. So he put her back in my life after I got clean. And I wasn't ready for it. I had just gotten in touch with this new freedom I had to not sit on the bar stool and not go from one dark spot to the next dark spot. I was living. And I wasn't really ready to deal with the responsibility of a child. But my sponsor told me I could do it only because I told her how I was feeling. I was feeling trapped. And I didn't want that responsibility by myself. What I learned from that is that I don't do something based on you being there with me. I do it based on me knowing what I can handle and what I cannot. And when I had that child, I had her initially because I love you, baby. I love you too. I want to have a baby. You going to be there for me, I'm going to be there for you. And then when it wasn't that way anymore, I didn't want the responsibility. And I had to get honest and come in the room and talk about it. So that I didn't take my frustration out on that child. So that I didn't make her pay for the fact that the relationship with her father and I didn't work. And I talked about it and I got better. Removing the mask means that I had to sit down with my daughter when she got old enough to understand, because she went to meetings with me from day one. Because I had to make meetings, and I didn't have a babysitter, so she had to go with me. But I had to sit down when she got old enough and explain to her what addiction was all about. She had seen mommy making meetings. She had seen mommy raising her hand, but she didn't really understand. And in doing that, I became approachable to my daughter. Because see, in my life, my mother had foreknowledge of the fact that my dad was an addict. But when they split up, she didn't want me to know that. She kept it. It was her secret. I don't know whether she was ashamed of it, and it doesn't really matter. What matters is I didn't have that information. I wanted my daughter to have the information. I wanted her to know that my desire is that you will never pick her. Nothing. Alcohol, marijuana, pills, or coke. But if you do, I'll love you. The reason why I say this is because addiction is on both sides of your family. I educated my daughter. Today, just for today, by God's grace, she doesn't drink, smoke, or use drugs. Am I saying it was because of that intervention? No. What I'm saying is because the grace of God and the work he had done on me prior to putting her back in my life. But I had to let her know that mommy don't have all the answers. That mommy has done some things. And if you want to know, I can probably help you and stop you from bumping your head. I just put it out there that I'm not perfect. And it was hard work trying to be perfect. It was hard work trying to come in to the meeting and appear that everything is okay when all hell is breaking loose. Come here, how are you? Girl, I'm blessed. What's been going on? Oh, girl, everything is good. It's fabulous. Look, and I'm walking the floor all night long. Crazy is all get out. But I'm blessed. What I started doing when I wanted to open my mouth and say I was blessed, and I know my gut was telling me I wasn't, I'm blessed might have came out and said, but girl, I'm going through something. You got a few minutes after the meeting? I need to talk. And I was able to purge myself, take that garbage up out of me, because I found out that stuff that I refuse to let go of, the stuff that I say I'm going to carry forever, that is the same stuff that'll make me use. So I don't do that today no more. I talk about it. I don't care what it is. I went through a divorce. It's almost over, y'all. But I went through it in these rooms talking about it. Telling y'all how I felt about it. Telling y'all how I felt about it being a death and this thing dying. I had dreams and hopes and aspirations for this relationship, and now, poof, all up in smoke. And I told y'all how that made me feel. How I thought that there must be something wrong with me. And y'all told me that sometimes it just doesn't work. It don't mean that you're defective or that you're unlovable. It just means that that wasn't the right one. Keep going. I met an old lady. She told me, she said, baby, she said, you married? I said, no, ma'am, I'm not married. She said, sugar, you're going to have to pull a whole lot of weeds before you find a flower. I was like, whoa. She must have been about 90. You're going to pull a whole lot of weeds before you find a flower. But I thank God that I didn't lose the willingness to pull the weeds. You know, because God has really blessed me with someone in my life who is sweet. It's sweet to me. May not be sweet to you, but it's sweet to me. Because I've had bitter, I can appreciate sweet. You know, and I'm willing to work. I want to get better. I can't sit up and act like I don't need to have another person in my life that I don't desire. See, I have went through that, y'all. Look, my name is Shantae. Look, I don't need no man because I can do for myself. But the real deal is nobody wants to be by themselves forever. It's a temporary situation. But your desire, if you're like me, is to have someone to share your life with. I thank God I didn't lose that hope. And that I didn't start to believe my own lie about what I don't need. What I do need, what I do know, is that I am not an island. And I need every last one of y'all to be present in my life so that I can get one more day clean. What I have found is there are some rewards in this program. There are some benefits, definite benefits, of staying clean and not using. Your life will change beyond measure. The things that were once stumbling blocks for you before will just be like the elevated steps. You go up, but you ain't really making no effort. Just keep coming back. It'll be just like that. Are you gonna have some good times? Oh yeah. You gonna have some not so good times? Cause there ain't no bad times since I got clean. Yeah. Let me just say that. No bad times. Some challenges maybe, but no bad times. That's gonna happen because that's life. It's what you do with them is what's important. Today I choose to be who I am. I know that there have been some things that have happened to me in my recovery, before my recovery, that were designed to change me. Some of the things were designed to make me cold, to make me the ice princess. But guess what? I'm not. And I can't be that. What's true and what's real about me is that I'm a very loving, sensitive, kind person. And I would love to think everybody's going to be like that. But the reality is not everybody is. But that doesn't mean that I need to change who I am. I need to be true to me. And like people will gravitate to me. If I put it out there, I'll get it back. You know, Narcotics Anonymous has been the best thing that ever happened to me. All I can say is if you're looking for a life-changing experience, if you're sick of the way your life is now, get you a sponsor, get you a step book, flat book, traditions, get involved in a home group, and your life will get better. But if you like misery, and you think suffering is just something you have to do, then don't do any of the above. And you can have that too. Today I choose to be happy, joyous, and free. And I have that in Narcotics Anonymous. And thank you for letting me share.